So, what do you know about Windows 10? Did you follow something? Did you know something? It's something completely new. So, one of the Windows, this presentation I've called it One App for Every Screen because the biggest feature, the biggest news of Windows 10 is the convergence story. So, Windows started to reinvent itself with Windows Phone 7.5 and with the Xbox 360. And as you can see, they are very far from each other. They are on two lines that never cross. But then came Windows 8, and Windows 8 started to introduce a kernel that is converged across every platform. So Xbox One, Windows 8, and Windows Phone 8, they have the same kernel. This doesn't mean that developers were able to use the same features, the same APIs, and the same everything, but it means that the drivers are the same, the kernel is the same, the runtime is the same. It was a first step. The second step came with Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1, because they started to have a convergent app model. Up to now, up to here, Windows Phone 8 apps were based on Silverlight, and Windows 8 apps were based on the new Windows runtime, which means that there are similarities. There is XAML, there is C Sharp, there are API, similar APIs, but they are not the same app model. Here we started to have the same app model. So if you create a universal project for Windows Phone 8 and 8.1, you still have two different projects because we have two different stores, but you are able to reuse 90% of the code, more or less. So the experience of creating an app for both platforms is much, much better. And finally, we have Windows 10, which is the summary of all the convergence story. So everything that runs Windows 10 has a convergent kernel and a convergent app model. So when you create an application for Windows 10, you are targeting phones, you are targeting PCs, you are targeting tablets, you are targeting the Xbox. And plus, we are adding some new things. So now we have also the Windows on Devices branch. So the IoT world, Raspberry Pis, all the device board can run Windows 10, and you can use Windows 10 on these devices. Plus, finally, we have one store. So you have a single store, and the store is the same on every platform. And when you download an application, it's the same that you have on all the other platforms. And we have a unique platform for all this family. So Windows 10 runs on IoT devices, Raspberry. We have a board made by Intel that works with it. We have mobile. Mobile for us means not just the phone, but also tablets or small tablets. We have the PC. We have the HoloLens, which is a new concept of holographic technology that runs with Windows 10. So when you create a Windows 10 application, it runs also on HoloLens. Did you ever see HoloLens? How does it work? Okay. If not, I can show you a video later. We have console. So Windows 10 runs on Xbox. And we have the Surface Hub, which is a new device we added to the Surface family, which is tailored for big companies. Basically, it's a 55-inch touchscreen device with like 100 points of touch points that is used for business purposes, so conferences, work, remote working. It's like a giant blackboard but digital. And all of this brings a set of features which are, which as developers we need to consider, like the fact that now we have a single application that runs on every platform. So we have tools to create an adaptive user interface, which means that the user interface needs to adapt to every device. We have multiple ways to get the input from the user. Since the app runs on every device, probably we get the input with touch screen, we get the input with keyboard and mouse, we get input from the eyes or from the movement of the user or from the controller. And then we have one store and one dev center. So you publish the app just once, and the app is available to consumers, to users on every platform, on every Windows platform. Which was the approach to create the application for Windows 8.1? As I've already mentioned, during the day, you have the shared project, which contains all the code that it's shared across the two platforms. And then you have two specific platform projects. This because right now we don't have the tools that will help you to create a great user experience that will span from the PC to the phone. So the best way is to have in the shared project all the business logic, and then in the specific projects you have the XAML views for each platform. Plus, right now you have two different stores. So you need to submit two packages and to maintain both of them. So this is how the Windows Universal 8.1 project looks like. So you have a Windows project, a Windows Phone project, and a shared project. And you use a conditional compilation, which is the one we have talked about, for example, in forms. So for example, here I'm performing some code connected to the settings in the charm bar that works only on Windows, because on Windows Phone you don't have the charm bar. Now instead, on Windows 10 we have a new platform called the Universal Windows Platform. It's based on the Windows runtime, so it's nothing new. If you have created Universal Windows app, it's the same. The difference is that when you create an application, you don't target anymore the operating system version, but you target the Universal Windows Platform version. And this is important because it's connected to the announcement that we also highlighted during build, that Windows is becoming Windows as a service. So probably you won't see anymore Windows 11, Windows 10, Windows 14, but Windows will be continuously updated over the time. So it doesn't make sense anymore to target a specific Windows version. You target a specific Universal Windows platform. So you define that your application requires at least this version to run. So for example, if the user decides not to update anymore his phone or his PC, probably won't be able to install your application. And you can also define the maximum version for which you have tested the application. So you can say, okay, this is the minimum version I require. There are new versions. I've tested my app maximum against this version. So I'm sure that it works fine also on newer version of the Universal Windows platform. And then you have one binary for every device. So you don't get any more two different AppX packages that you need to upload on the two different stores, but you have one single AppX package that is published and run on every Windows 10 device. So the Universal Windows platform is a collection is the base ground of a lot of devices. And okay, it's cool to have something in common across all these devices, but we are still talking about different devices. So how we can manage that in an application which is unique, we need any way to leverage the different features of the platform? With extensions. Extensions are a set of SDKs that you can add as a reference to your projects, and they add the specific platform features for the platform you're targeting. Since they are libraries, which are included and based on the Universal Windows platform, they don't give you build issues, compilation issues. So if you add the library for the IoT world, the project will just compile, no matter if you are not launching it on an IoT device. What you can do is that you don't use anymore the conditional compilation, but you test for capabilities. So you check if a specific API is supported or not. So you are not checking anymore for the device, it's a phone, it's a tablet, but you are checking this device support this feature. So we move on from the device concept to the feature concept. So for example, let's see a demo. I have my Windows 10 projects here. And I have an application which just has it's a page with a grid. Let me compile this. I don't. Okay. Okay, let me do this thing because probably. So here. Sometimes does this. So I need to go here. Packages. Let me delete this, and then. Let me rebuild. Should download again the packages, and this time. It should work. Okay. I have just a text block, nothing more, that says something, if Visual Studio is back. Okay. That just says I'm a universal Windows app. But if I go into the code behind, I'm using the API detection feature to detect if I'm on a phone or not. Because one of the requirements is to manage the back button because I want to do something. In this case, I want to display a message to the user. But the back button exists only on the phone. You don't have the back button on the PC. So this is managed using API detection. So I define the namespace of the API I want to use, and I say, is type present? Yes, okay, then subscribe to the backpressed event. It's not conditional compilation, because since we are on the Universal Windows platform, the hardware buttons class works. The problem is that on a PC, that class is basically a dummy class. It doesn't do nothing, so it won't work. It will work just on phones. I've been able to target this library because I did other reference, and in the Windows Universal I can see my extension. So this is the mobile, we have one for the desktop, we have one for IoT. And what happens here is that if I launch the app on the... okay, I need to choose X, the... If I launch my application on the local machine, why is complaining? Probably because I changed the architecture. Let's try a rebuild all.
You had a mistake on main page XML.
Ah, okay, thank you. Probably, let's go here, main page. No, I move too fast. Main page. Okay, yes, correct. Thank you. I didn't realize I made this mistake. Okay, so I launched the Windows 10 application, and as you can see, nothing special. So. Just a message, I'm a universal Windows app. However, what I can do is that if I take this application, the same package, so I'm not choosing another application, and I save it, I don't want to target the local machine, but I want to target the 10 Windows Phone 10 emulator. It's the first time I launch it, so it will take a while. OS is starting. As you can see, the difference compared to the previous approach is that now when you are opening the debug menu, you see local devices, remote devices, emulators, because it's the same package that is running on all platforms. It's not anymore a package that runs just on a specific platform. One other thing that you can notice is that I had to choose the architecture here, because Windows 10 is using a new feature called .NET Native, which basically it's a It reminds of the ahead of time compilation you seen this morning on iOS. So basically, you don't have anymore the just-in-time compilation when the app, and the app is compiled when it launches, but the .NET native, it's a way to get this C# code and publish directly on the store a native package, which is much faster, especially in startup times. And as a consequence of this, the any CPU architecture is gone, because when you develop, when you target a native package, when you create a native package, you have the same problem when you create, for example, an app in C++. You can cross-compile it for every platform. This is something that is achieved by the managed code, just-in-time compilation, but you need to choose the architecture you want to use. So in this case, we are running the app on the emulator, so we use x86. If we would launch the app on a real device, we would have used ARM. However, this is completely transparent for developers, because when you publish the package on the store, the package that is made by Visual Studio automatically puts all the pieces, all the various builds inside the package. So when it's uploaded on the store, the user will download the proper version for the device he's using. So now we're launching the same app on Windows 10, on the phone, it's the same, but when I press the back button, the message is displayed, because I'm using API detection, and if I'm supporting the back button, I want to manage it. I want to display the message instead of performing navigation. One very important difference between the old approach and the new approach is that now you have, having a single app that runs on any platform means that the app needs to adapt to all the screens. Because we are not talking anymore about an app that runs on the PC and an app that runs on a phone. We are talking on an app that can run on a 7-inch tablet, on a 4-inch phone, on a 60-inch screen connected to the Xbox. So you need to manage the fact that the UI should be responsive. And in Visual Studio, or better, in the new XAML, we have added a set of controls and tools that will help you to create application with an approach that is similar to the web. So right now you still you already have the concept of a responsive web, which means websites that are able to automatically adapt to the size of the screen. The same approach is used here, and the XAML will give you a set of features that will help you to achieve this goal. The other way, which is not the suggested one, because it makes the code complex, the project more complex, but in case you need to offer an experience to the user which is very different from one platform to another, you have the chance to have the same CodeBehind class connected to different XAML files. The most important thing that will help you to create great user experiences are the new Visual State triggers. Visual State are a way, it's not something new, it's there in the XAML, are the way to manage the different states that a control can have. Example, you have a button. When you press the button, the visual UI of the button changes. The default UI of the button is white text with a black background. When I press the button, it becomes black text on a white background. This is managed by Visual State. So you have a Visual State that defines, okay, this is the state of the button. When the button is pressed, I want to change just these two properties. So you don't have to create multiple buttons definition, but you just specify which are the differences from the base Visual State. These states are usually are managed by code. So you have a class you can that you can call Visual State Manager dot go to state, and you can manually say when to go to a state. With triggers, we enable you to have changes in the states without writing code. So they will automatically be invoked when a specific condition changes. By default, we provide you the adaptive triggers, which are built-in triggers that react to the size of the window, but you can create your own triggers. So you have a base trigger class and you can define when a trigger should be executed or not. Let's see an example. This is another one with a wow effect. So this is the example, adaptive triggers. In my application, I have, as you can see, the code behind is completely empty. And in my page, I have this. I have a text block and a grid. And I added a couple of usual states. One is called wide state, and the other is called narrow state. And I'm using an adaptive trigger to say that when the size of the window is between 0 and 600, I want to apply this. So I want to apply that the background of the main grid, which is the grid, the name of the control, is red. When the value of the, when the size of the window is bigger than 600, I want to apply this one instead. So the result is that when I launch the application here on the PC, it's the, okay, I have my nice application with the green background, but if I start to do this, it becomes red without writing code, so just XAML. And this is how you can manage the different layouts, because for example, if I launch my application on the phone, you will never see the green status, because the phone it has a small screen, so probably you will never see a size of the window bigger than 600. So this is how you can tailor the UI of the application to run on both devices. Now I'm just changing colors, but I could move stuff, I could change the size of the font, I can do everything I want.
Change orientation?
If you change orientation, you can use one of these. So when the orientation changes, you have also a mean window 8 property. So you can define how the page will look like when the 8 is below a different value, which means that the screen has been rotated. Or however, you can create your triggers. So for example, there's a US MVP that has published on GitHub a set of custom triggers. For example, he created one trigger that is able to detect if the platform supports the back button or not. So for example, since this application has a back button on the UI, when it runs on a phone which has the back button, it hides the back button on the UI because it's not needed. Or otherwise, you can have one code behind page connected to multiple XAML page. It's not the suggested way to go, but it's useful when you need to provide a completely different experience across different devices. And this goal is achieved thanks to the fact that when you create a new page in the application, now you have a new template which is called XAML view, and this template creates a page without a code behind file. So you can see it here. What is trying to do Visual Studio? Okay, if I go here, you can see that in this class, in this folder, I have this page, but the page doesn't have a code behind file. I don't have the arrow to see the code behind file. What I've done is that I have a main page here, which says, with a text block, says I'm running on a desktop, and this page is the default page of my application, and it has a code behind class, which is different pages.mainpage, And I have some code behind code, then when the button is clicked, I display a message dialog. Then I have a folder called device family dash mobile, and this is an naming convention. So you can have device family dash mobile, dash desktop, dash IoT, dash Xbox. It will pick the XAML for the right device. This XAML doesn't have code behind, but it's connected to the same class of the other main page. So you, as you can see, the X class tag is different pages.mainpage. I have another control, which displays I'm running on a phone, but the button is connected to the same event handler of the other class, because they are pointing to the same class. So if I go here and I say go to definition, I'm back to the original code behind class. So what happens is that if I launch the application on the PC, I will, Visual Studio, or better, the Windows Universal Windows Platform will use the standard main page. So I'm running on a desktop, click me, and I see the message. And then I can do the same on the phone. And the phone instead will display a completely different message, because it will use the other XAML page. But the code behind, the click will just work because we are using the same code behind. Another way to, another control which is very useful to manage the UI is the relative panel, which is the same we've seen in Android this morning. So basically it's a way to put items, elements into the panel and say, okay, this should be aligned here, here. I want this below the other. I want this in the right of the other. I want this aligned with the top of the screen. It's useful, especially in combination with the triggers we've seen before, because you can use it to quickly change the elements in the page according to the size. So if I go here, the application, this simple application has a set of four colored rectangles with four names, and according to the size of the page, I move them. So I say that the rectangle 2 should be, the rectangle 2 should be in right of the rectangle 1. Rectangle 3 should be below. While in the other state, I say that all of them should be one below the other. So what I get is that when I launch the application, by default, it will use this state because the size of the window is big. So I can see my logo. But when I move, they are shifted one below the other very quickly and very easily. So if you need to move things around the screen when the size changes, this is the best approach. Another control we've added is the split view, which is used to implement hamburger menu experiences, which is the menu that you tap and comes in. Actually, it's not really an hamburger menu because we don't provide you the infrastructure to have an hamburger menu out of the box, but it's just, let me rephrase. We are not providing you an hamburger menu to use out of the box, but we are giving you a control to implement it any way you want. So if you want on the top, if you want the icon on the top, on the bottom, on the left, on the right, it's up to you. You can define the user experience you want. The split view control is made by a pane, which is the content of the panel, and the content of the page that is displayed here. And you have multiple ways to display the control, the panel. You have inline, overlay, compact inline, which means that it always stay open, it goes in overlay, it steals space from the content. It's up to you what you want to do. Just to, if you want to see a real example, I can show you the news app. This app is using an overlay approach to display the content, while the music app instead is using a slightly different approach, because as you can see, when the app is displayed in full screen, the pane is always visible, but when I start shrinking it, it goes away. It gets small, and if I want to see the panel, I need to open it from the with a swipe. Well, I will go faster now because these are the most interesting things. The application lifecycle of Windows 10 is the same of Windows 8.1, so you have running, activation, suspension, stuff like that, but now you have also more capabilities to do background stuff. So you have a way to have your app keep running even when it's suspended. So let me finish my job. I'm doing something, I'm uploading some data, something like that. The user suspends the app, I want to continue. I don't want to be interrupted. And then we have new triggers to have even more flexibility with background tasks. So background tasks are pieces of code that can run when the application is in background. Triggers means that something happens and a background task is performed. However, the core message is always user first. So we have added new things, but we have a new resource manager that will always take care that what are you doing, what you are doing is not draining the battery of the phone, is not ruining the performances of the other app, and so on. So, for example, you can have tasks that can run without a time limit, but in this case, there's no guarantee. So as soon as you are low on resources, they get killed. Or you can have a traditional approach, which, okay, you can run for 25 seconds, and you will always run for 25 seconds, but no more. I can't give you more time. And this is how, for example, you manage an extended request. So let's say that you need to finish upload some data. You ask for an extension, and if you grant this extension, you perform the operation. You always need to check that the extension is not denied, because in case the phone is low on resources, is low on battery, it will deny, so you need to manage this status. And these are the triggers that you have right now in Windows 8.1. These are the triggers instead that get added in Windows 10. So you can manage much more conditions. App-to-app communication is a way to communicate different apps. It's something that was already there in Windows Phone 8.1, in the Windows 8.1, and it's based on a URL. So you can register a protocol, and then when you call this protocol, the new app gets opened, and if you pass parameters to this protocol, to this URI, you can invoke specific things. So for example, the Skype app can decide that when an application invokes the Skype URI passing a number, Skype will call that number. On 8.1, it was limited to schema invocation, so I launch the app and the app runs. On Windows 10, we have the ability to return results. So I launch another app, the app does something, and it passes something back to me. And then we have also foreground to background. So you can publish a background task that reacts to foreground, from foreground calls. So an application can use your background task to perform additional services. It's something that is already implemented, but it wasn't available to developers up to now. If you have a Windows phone, you'll know that you are able to see in the People Hub updates from Facebook and Twitter. This is implementing with this approach. So you have a background task that goes, retrieves the data from Facebook and Twitter and passes it back to the application that called this data. You have a new unified navigation model. You are used to have the back button on Windows Phone. You don't have it on Windows. Now you have it also on Windows. So when you run an application on Windows, you have two options. If you're running application on the desktop, you will get a back button on the Chrome of the window. If you are running it on a tablet or a small tablet, you get the back button in the start screen, in the start bar. And the experience is the same of the phone. So I have an app, I launch the application, I scroll some content, I go to another content, I press back, and I return to the previous page. As you can see, the arrow is in the Chrome of the page. The only difference is that when on the phone, when you press the back button on the start screen, on the main page of the application, you are redirected to the start screen. On the desktop, it's simply disabled. So if you are in the first page, it's disabled. Cortana is much more interesting now, because Cortana was always, it's a cool feature, and speech APIs are very well implemented even now. But interaction with Cortana was limited to, I say a command and I launch an application. So Twitter, post a tweet saying how cool is Xamarin, or how cool is Windows 10. It will open the Twitter application, and maybe the field with the text of the Twitter will be a ready field. Instead, now you can publish background tasks which interact with Cortana. So I say Twitter, post a tweet, Cortana will start the background task and will get back to you and will ask you, okay, tell me the text of the tweet. You pronounce the text of the tweet, and then it will ask you a confirm, and you will publish. It will publish the tweet for you without opening the Twitter application. Everything is done directly in the user interface of Cortana. So, for example, this user is saying, "Adventure Watch shown my trip to London." The background task gets activated, retrieves the information, and it passes it back to the application, to Cortana. So Cortana is displaying the information about the trip directly in the user interface. Tiles are for sure the most distinguished feature of Windows and Windows Phone, and the most problematic thing with Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 is that you have a lot of templates to customize the tile, but if you want to go out of the box and use your own custom template, you don't have too much choice. You need to render an image, you need to find a way to render an image also maybe in a background task without hitting the memory limits. Now things are much more easier because custom templates can be defined with XML. So you write the XML of the template, and you define the elements, you split the elements into group. Every group can be displayed or not according to the size of the screen. So for example, on a small screen, I display just one mail, but on a big screen, I can display two of them. Same here. The density is automatically adjusted, so the text is automatically spread across the tile so that you can read. And everything is made by XAML. So as you can see now, you have properties that, for example, you can say wrap the text. Toast work the same. You have you can define the toast with XML. The new thing is that now toast can be interactive. And you can have a background task that gets executed when you get a toast. So you tap on a toast, and for example, a background task will allow to get the message written here and send it to the recipient. The operating system already implements that for the messages, and all the apps for Windows 10 will be able to do the same. So when you tap on a toast, what happens is that you can use the standard approach that happens also right now. So I tap on the toast, the app is launched, I get the argument of the toast, and I do something in the app, like displaying more details about the toast. Now you have background activation. So it's not anymore the app that launches, but the task that launches. And then you have also protocol and system. So you can invoke another application, or you can let the system handle the action. For example, there are a couple of predefined toasts for alarms and reminders, so you can provide an experience similar to the calendar or to the alarm application with a toast notification. And in the end, let's talk about, I received a question about this this morning, the new development scenarios that Windows 10 is enabling not just to Microsoft developers, but all the developers, to help them to create apps for Windows 10. The first one, it's a bridge called the Project Astoria, and it's a way to have Java code running into a Windows 10 application. So you can take Java code from your Android application and have it running on Windows 10 as it is. So it's not converted into C Sharp, it's running as it is. You have you can integrate easily with the Windows 10 APIs. So if you want to send notification, if you want to use the Bing Maps instead of the Google Maps, it's just a couple of lines to change. The store will allow you to submit the APK of your Android app on the store and get a report on how much code you're going to reuse. Of course, the more complex is the app, the more the app heavily integrates with the platform, like Bluetooth, NFC, something like that, the less code you're going to reuse. This bridge, I think it will work great for many applications that have a lot of business logic and they present the data to the user. Now Windows Phone lacks of the store, lacks of many applications which are very simple from a back-end point of view, maybe banking, airline companies, so applications that are not doing something weird with Bluetooth, NFC, beacon, they just take some data from, say, just maybe the backend can be very complex, but my point is that they interact with some services on the backend and they present the data. I think that this bridge will be very helpful to help all the developers to bring these applications also to Windows 10. Actually, the biggest limitation of this bridge is that it's still a work in progress, so it's not public yet. You can go on the website and submit your package and ask to be included into the preview, but this bridge for now works just for phones. So if you create a Windows 10 app with this bridge, it won't target all the devices of the Windows 10 family, but just the phone. And then you have a Project Islandwood, which is more or less the same, but with Objective-C code. So you can take Objective-C code and have it running in Visual Studio and in your application. The biggest limitation of this bridge right now is that if you have dependencies from third-party libraries, you need to include and to have all the source code of all of them. So you can't add just the compiled binary, but you need to include the complete source code. But the approach is the same. So you are able to reuse Objective-C code, and with Objective-C APIs, you are able to target some of the Windows 10 features. Then you have Project Centennial, which is probably the one I'm waiting more eager, because it will solve all the mess that it's now, the installation of application in Windows that mess with the registry, mess with files, and stuff like that. You are able to take a Win32 app, so WPF, Windows Forms, whatever you want, and publish it on the store as a store app. And you will have access also to the Universal Windows platform. So if you wanted to take your WPF app and display a notification to the user, you can do it. The great advantage of this approach is that the app will be a traditional app that will run on the desktop, but it will run in an environment that makes safer for the user from the developer. So you will have access to the file system, to all the features that the app is using, but for example, the registry is isolated. So the app will write the stuff on the registry, but it won't be the main registry of Windows. It will be a registry specific for the app. And when you uninstall the app, everything is gone. No apps, no files around the file system, no registry left. It's also a great feature for developers because it will improve a lot the upgrade scenario. I want to release an upgrade of my application, I submit a new package on the store. That's all. And for example, at build, Photoshop, Adobe has already announced that Photoshop will come as a Project Centennial app on the store. So you'll be able to download Photoshop directly from the store and have it working like a Windows Store app, but like a desktop app. Like right now, it won't be a touch app because Photoshop is tailored for graphic designers. which work with MAUs and pens, but it will be a startup, so it will be easy to install, it will be easy to update, and so on. The last project is called the Project Westminster, and it's made for web developers. If you have a website which is made with a responsive layout, so we are not talking about an old website which uses old technologies and libraries, but a modern website, you will be able to package it into an application and publish it on the store. The code of your website won't be included in the application. So the manifest will simply point to the URL of your website, and the code of your application will live on the server. We will give you a library to get access to universal Windows platform features from the website. So you will do something like, if Windows, send a notification, geolocalize the user, do something with the universal Windows platform APIs. If you need to update your application, update the website. At Build, we showed a website that was for a music service, and in the universal, the website was a real website running on the web, but when it was installed on the application, as an application, it was able to leverage the background audio APIs to let the user listen to the music even when the app is suspended, for example. And this is a good approach if you have a well-developed website, and maybe you are a company, you want to have your showcase app to showcase what you are doing. Instead of creating a new app just for that, if you have developed a good website, a responsive website, you can just reuse that and submit it as an application. And that's all. I think you have listened too much for today. Well, first I would like to thank you for listening to listen to me for the whole day. And I'm really sorry for the problems I had. I wasn't able to show you the demos with iOS and the problem we had with the emulator, but when I get back home, I will try to look for Murphy and I will try to kill him. And let me show you again the start for maybe this. Okay, these are my contacts, so if you have any question, or just write me an email or ping me on Twitter. And my goal was, as I said to some of you, my goal was to prepare a OneDrive folder with all the slides and the demos, but unfortunately yesterday night I was trying to repair my machine, and I wasn't able to do that. So I've already made an agreement with my colleagues, local colleagues. I will publish all of the things on OneDrive folder, and then they will send you a recap mail of the event to all the participants with the OneDrive link, so you'll be able to access to all the stuff. And if you have any question, I'm here until I have some few minutes. I'm not in a rush. My flight is late tonight. So thank you again, and